Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 12:40 p.m. and that is Pacific Summer Time. Today is July 2nd. Well, Hong Kong was closed today, but Tencent, for example, was down approximately 2%, and that countermanded about half of its bounce that we had on Friday. And I started off just by talking about Tencent, because it is one of a number of Chinese tech-oriented shares that have lost upward momentum, that are potentially putting in top formations, and are right in the region of their respective trend means. When we look at Alibaba, then there is an additional factor with Alibaba that is worthy of consideration. The first is that, it is in the region of its trend mean, and there was a substantial failed upside break 3 weeks ago. But there is the prospect of Chinese CDRs, well, it would be Chinese Depository Receipts, CDRs, that are about to be launched, and that could be a bullish characteristic for a number of these shares that are listed in the US, pretty much creating dual listings or depository receipts in China. And considering that there are literally millions of investors in China that have had no opportunity to buy some of these tech shares, then the question would be whether they would use this as an opportunity. I suspect that that is more than likely going to be the case. But they may be somewhat gun-shy, considering the speed with which the stock market is coming down. And the A-share market did close off its low today, but it countermanded the entire advance that we saw on Friday. When you see an upside key reversal, the key to the key is follow-through and size. It wasn't a particularly large move, so therefore it really did need to follow through on the upside in here today, and that did not occur. And when we look at the banking sector, well, that pulled back even more violently. And it was just off its lows last week, but it was down in a rather dynamic manner in here today. So the chances are that that is going to translate into a volatile environment on Hong Kong when it opens tomorrow. There are a number of additional points that are, I think, worth highlighting. The first is that Bitcoin was up in a dynamic manner in here today. And when we look at the fact that it was up by over 10%, it was up some yesterday and then again in here today. So taking the gain over the last, well, let's call it 48 hours, because the way Bloomberg, even though Bitcoin trades on a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week basis, Bloomberg tends to treat it as a 5-day-a-week security. So it's up over 10% from the close on Friday is probably the best way of describing it. It is bouncing from the lows that we saw earlier this year. But the dynamic move on the upside for Bitcoin and the dynamic move on the downside from China reminds me of the fact that it was one of the primary vehicles for expatriating funds from China in the period when the last period when the renminbi was weak. And that was back in 2016. Back in 2016 was the first time that Bitcoin was going through 1,000. And this has been a substantial devaluation of the renminbi. It's actually much faster than anything we've seen in years, much faster than anything we saw in 2015 or 2016. It's way above, the dollar is way above the trend mean right now. And there is some speculation that the People's Bank of China will be alarmed at the speed with which the renminbi is coming down, and that may indeed be the case. But I think one of the deciding factors will be on just how much pressure we see on people trying to get their money out of the country. And Bitcoin is a potential arbiter of that particular condition. Well, then we also have the fact that high yield in China is something that's rather difficult to track. And when we look at the total return on Chinese high yield, it's a rather difficult thing to capture. So I did find an index that is a total return index of Asia ex Japan with China US dollar denominated debt. And it's a total return index. We can see that this is the largest pullback since at least 2015, although I think it is somewhat larger than that right now. Every other occasion on which we've had a pullback like this, we've had a substantial rally, and the rally has then pushed on to new high ground in a rather dynamic manner. So there's no evidence of that just yet. And the US dollar denominated Chinese debt is still now trending lower on a total return basis. And this is meaningful considering that this peak is substantially higher than any peak that we've seen in at least the last decade, and that it is richly traded, and most particularly in an environment where the banking sector is trending lower, the currency is trending lower, and there are big questions being asked about availability of credit. Again, against a background where you have trade war fears. So there is quite obviously some dynamic moves going on in China, and it is going to require a concerted institutional and governmental effort to support markets in order to really re-establish confidence. And what we've seen, for example, over the weekend in Indonesia, was that they raised interest rates by 50 basis points to little avail so far. And now it does look likely that the rupiah is going to get back to its lows seen in 2015, and the central bank moved in a very decisive manner back then to support the currency. And it's going to likely be something similar is going to be required on this particular occasion. The Brazilian real has also continued to trend lower in here. It is coming back towards this four area, and when we think about what is the Selic rate, then that's the overnight rate for Brazil. Well, it trended down from 14 to 6.4 over the course of the last 18 months. It's only a matter of time before the Brazilian Central Bank is forced to start raising it once more. And it's going to require a substantial move in that interest rate to really start to put some firm footing underneath the currency. But of course, Brazil is in a recession environment right now. So the underperformance of the stock market is, I think, also worthy of consideration here, that this has been a massive reaction against the prevailing trend. Often what you'll see after that is that you get a period of right-hand extension and ranging, and then the onus is on the bulls to prove that they can push back above the trend mean and confirm a return to medium-term demand dominance. So Brazil really does have a lot of work to do. Now, if we go back and think about everything that's happening in China, well, they're going to have to either raise interest rates, they're going to have to start buying the banks. They've already started to talk about banning US dollar denominated debt. Well, if they're banning US dollar denominated debt, how on earth are these companies going to refinance unless they have ample access to renminbi denominated debt? That means that the banks are going to have to lend. So this is a big factor here, that China has not yet demonstrated that it is both willing to raise interest rates, which would support the currency, or lower interest rates in order to support the credit conditions of particularly the high yield sector. So this is going to have to require some pretty big joined up thinking on behalf of the Chinese administration to I think stem the rot that we're seeing in this underperformance of the Chinese stock market. Well, if we look at what's going on in Europe, then a lot of people are talking about whether Merkel is going to survive, and it's looking rather, I think, likely that she will in fact be able to survive this revolt that's going on within the CSU, part of her coalition. And now the Euro Stoxx index was off its lows in here today, and it is back in the region of previous lows, and this is the lower side of a year-long range. Well, there is an inverse correlation between what's going on in the Eurozone and what's going on with the euro. And the euro was in negative territory today, but it was off its lows. And this continues to look like a distribution below the trend mean. And it really would need to sustain a move above the trend mean to really question that this isn't a downtrend for the euro. Europe needs a weaker currency more than the USA does, not least because it exports a great deal more to China than the USA does. And with these questions overhanging what's going on in China, then there are questions overhanging Europe. And then if we look at high yield in Europe, we're presented with an environment where high yield spreads are rising. Sorry, I should have had high yield spreads, not total return. So the Credit Suisse index gives us that the fact that high yield spreads are continuing to trend higher in Europe. And that is a direct reflection of the tightening credit conditions that you have within Europe. And of course, you have the ECB that is approaching the end of its quantitative easing program. And obviously, they are as wedded to dogma as they were back in when they were reducing the size of their balance sheet previously. On that occasion, they created a deflationary environment, and they look likely to follow through and do exactly what they said they were going to do and stop buying bonds in September. But they don't seem to be paying much attention to what's going on in the market. And the banks index, which is a shade of where it was previously, was off its low in here today, but it's still got a lot of work to do to really confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. It is way oversold in the short term, so it's not at all beyond the bounds of possibility that we get some pause of consolidation. And if we get an upward dynamic, well, then we could begin to talk about a failed downside break and potentially mean reversion. But beyond that, it really has a lot of work to do to put in some support so that higher levels can be sustained. Then, if we look at what's going on in the USA, well, the JNK, that's the spider junk bond ETF, broke down in a dynamic manner in here today, gapping lower. So it is closing out the day pretty much on the lows. And this is important because it had got this almost textbook distribution below the trend mean for most of this year, and now it is reestablishing the downtrend. So that is suggesting that pressure is starting to come to bear on the high yield sector within the USA. And this was last updated on Friday. We're going to get an additional data point tomorrow, but it is right at the upper side of this evolving base formation. Well, at the chart seminar, we talk about ranges being explosions waiting to happen, and this is a very, very clearly defined range. And it is also very inert relative to anything that we've seen over the course of the last decade. And generally, when you have an instrument that is prone to volatility, that becomes less volatile, well, then the chances are that when it breaks, it's going to break in a dynamic manner. And that's what we're seeing with high yield right now. There is, if the high yield ETF is breaking downwards, there is a high likelihood that this is going to have broken upwards when it is updated tomorrow. Well, I've often considered that Tesla is the canary in the coal mine for the high yield sector. It is a triple C rated credit. So over the weekend, it was able to produce 5,000 cars. But I'm posting an article in here today which helps to highlight some of the shortcuts that they're taking in order to meet that goal. Now, that was 5,000 a week, and they hoped to reach that by the end of the second quarter. Now the question is whether they're going to get 5,000 this week and whether they're going to use the 4th of July holiday as an excuse not to meet that goal. Well, then of course you have this question whether those 5,000 people that are going to get their cars, are they going to be happy with them, or whether they're just going to fall apart when there are 300 spot welds that have been avoided in their production. So these are very big questions for a share that is trading at $337 and was not able to hold its rally in here today, but it was off its low. Very volatile, but this is exactly why people are invested in Tesla, because they want the volatility. They want it to go up a lot. But now the question is whether it is going to hold this move above the trend mean. And that's the really big question. Having broken the progression of lower rally highs, now it is trading above the trend mean. Now it really does need to hold the move above the trend mean. If it fails, we would be talking about I think a sharply deteriorating environment. It really is for the bulls to prove that it can hold this move above the $300 area, really. And then when we look at what's going on Wall Street, well, Wall Street was in was down in early trading, but has actually turned it around and has confirmed support again in the region of 2,700 on the S&P 500. So that's rather impressive. And the S&P continues to hold the progression of higher reaction lows, and it has not quite unwound its overbought condition relative to the trend mean. Well, we're now in the third quarter, and there are expectations that earnings are going to come in ahead of, I think perhaps the best way to describe it is that earnings are expected to be pretty impressive. And the fact that the Nasdaq also was able to recoup its earlier loss and to turn it into a gain on the day, and then confirming support in the region of 7,000, this is, I think, might be considered the best of all possible worlds, that it has broken out and now it is confirming support in the region of 7,000. This is really very firm action. If it can follow through on the upside tomorrow, well, then we have a low of near-term significance, and there is the potential then that we could see this rally persist. So this is, I think, a very clear indication also that some of the largest weightings in the Nasdaq 100 don't have operations in China. That if you think about how much money does Google make from China, well, then the answer is zero. And the same for Facebook or Twitter. Then there are a substantial number of the largest technology companies have been completely excluded from the Chinese market. But of course, the big exception is Apple. And Apple does substantial business in China, and even there, it was able to reverse an earlier decline to finish on the high of the day. So what this at least suggests is that the reality of trade wars is that the USA is in a stronger position, not least because of the strength of the dollar, and that money is flowing out of the emerging markets and back towards the dollar, where you have relative performance of the stock market and the currency. And most particularly when the Asian currencies are now accelerating lower, and the Latin American currencies are also on the lower side and made new reaction lows in here today. Well, this is burnishing the attraction of Wall Street generally. So that, I think, is an important characteristic. Well, then you also have to think about the commodity-related currencies, like the Australian dollar, which was down in a dynamic manner again in here today, and it completely countermanded the move that we had on Friday. So the weakness of the currency, in much the same way that it is creating this move in Europe, every time the currency weakens, the stock market is reasonably firm, and the Australian dollar, sorry, the ASX 200 is probably going to be in positive territory tomorrow, considering the relative strength that we're having on Wall Street and the weakness of the currency. So what that suggests is that the Australian market is benefiting both from the weakness of its currency and also the relative strength of the energy sector. And Brent crude was in negative territory today by almost $2, not least because Saudi Arabia is going to go all out for additional production. But West Texas Intermediate was only down by a quarter of a dollar, and what that suggests is that the spread between the two contracts is likely to converge here. So I think that we are still in a rather difficult environment from the perspective of the emerging markets. They are in a tight position because with the USA raising interest rates, then they are under pressure to do the same. So the USA is in fact exporting its monetary policy around the world by virtue of the fact that there is so much dollar debt that is outstanding. In fact, I saw an article in here today. It was on the Wall Street Journal, and it had a very interesting graphic, and I'm going to try and find that right now. Well, the graphic was interesting because when we go back and think about everything that happened back in 2013 and 2014 and 2015, there was a lot of people talking about the quantity of debt that was outstanding in US dollars. And the reality is that that quantity of debt has simply just continued to expand. So that's a problem, because with the strength of the dollar, we're talking about record quantities of US dollar denominated debt. And that's not something that's sustainable. So when we think about exactly what it is that is really driving the market right now, we would have to at least consider that that's going to be one of the factors. So when all of that dollar debt is outstanding, then people have got logically to think about how on earth they're going to fund that rolling over. Perhaps the most important point is that there is an awful lot of dollar debt that's outstanding, but that it's not all due to be refinanced in here this year. In fact, there is less debt that needs to be refinanced this year than there was in any of these issues that we've had over the course of the last decade. So even though we have a problem with the quantity of debt that remains outstanding, this is also, I think, something that is perhaps being overplayed. The much bigger question is, what's China going to do with all of its with the bad loans that are outstanding on banks, the shadow banking sector? These are the very big questions from the perspective of the global investors. So this article from the Wall Street Journal contained this graphic. There we go. So we can see very clearly that it has continued to advance, that general government, financial corporations, and non-financial debt have all been trending higher, and most particularly since 2015. So that tells us that this dollar-denominated debt issue is non-trivial, and this is something that is going to put pressure on the emerging markets, and that is why their currencies are continuing to trend lower. And there isn't an easy answer to it. Of course, there is the potential answer, and it is that eventually the underperformance of emerging markets will put such pressure on those economies that they move into recessions, and then that will have a loop back effect on the US economy, which would stop the Federal Reserve from raising interest rates. But we don't have much evidence of that yet, and the relative strength of Wall Street and the fact that you still have very low unemployment, well, that's going to stay the hand of the Fed from moving in sympathy with the rest of the global economy. So they're probably not yet at a position where they're going to get a lot of assistance from the USA. And I think with that, I will leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.